This episode is brought to you by Tranquil Path Financial Planning. Britta Kepf is a dedicated special needs financial planner at Tranquil Path Financial Planning. Britta's personalized approach in fee-only planning ensures unbiased, tailored advice. Britta specializes in retirement planning and addressing the unique financial challenges of families with special needs kids anywhere in the United States. Navigating government benefits and long-term needs planning can be overwhelming and stressful, but with Britta's guidance, families find clarity and peace of mind. Secure your family's future with a compassionate and knowledgeable partner. Contact Britta Kepf at Tranquil Path Financial Planning for personalized financial planning that meets your family's unique needs. For more information or to contact Britta, visit tranquilfp.com. That's TranquilFP.com. Welcome to the Autism Dad Podcast. I'm Rob Gorski. For the past 7 seasons, this podcast has provided parents with education, community, resources, and validation. This season, you'll hear from parents just like you, as well as my own kids, who will offer their unique perspectives on what it's like for them to navigate the world as young autistic people. You can subscribe on any one of your favorite podcast listening apps, and for more information, to be a guest or a sponsor, please visit theautismdad.link. Welcome back. I'm Rob Gorski, and this is the Autism Dad Podcast. Thank you all so much for taking the time to tune in. I've got a great episode for you guys today. My guest is Kevin Miller. Kevin is an autism dad, but he's also the executive director of Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities. This is a department in the state of Ohio that is responsible for providing individuals with disabilities the services and support they need to both attain and maintain employment. You guys have heard me talk about my son Gavin. He's 24. He went through the program at OOD and was able to get a job. He had training and a job coach and a mentor. I mean, it was an amazing opportunity for him, and it's made a big difference in his life. And so Kevin's here to talk all about that. We're going to talk about his son's transition into adulthood, some of the challenges associated with that. And it's very relatable. And while I realize not everybody here lives in the state of Ohio, every state has something like this. And this can get you pointed in the right direction. So again, thank you for taking the time to tune in. I really appreciate it. And I hope you enjoy the interview. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here. I really appreciate it. Could you take a second to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Kevin Miller, Director of Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities. We are the state agency that is responsible for serving individuals of all types of disabilities, age 14 and up, whether that be intellectual, physical, sensory, mental health, in all 88 counties to find employment, continue employment. Also, we provide Social Security benefits for those who file for it here in Ohio.
Wow. Okay. And we were kind of talking a little bit before we were recording. I am living through this right now. So, mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about this conversation for a couple of reasons. One, you're an autism dad.
That's right. Right.
So like you get it. We have that bond. Mm-hmm. But there are so many parents who are unaware of this
right
opportunity for their kids. Mm-hmm. Or they maybe assume that their kids don't qualify, or you know, whatever the deal right. is. And I didn't know about it until I think it was 2023 was when my oldest son Gavin went through the program. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing experience.
Right.
So what I thought we could do is just sort of talk about what OOD is and just kind of help parents navigate that a little bit. But if you want to start with kind of sharing your story,
sure.
That would be a great place to start too, because I think it's awesome that you have that connection, right?
Sure.
So you can relate to people.
Well, you know, one of the things I always talk about, Rob, when I started being a advocate and being an autism dad, you know, things were a little bit different. Some, you know, my son is now 25 years of age, and, you know, ADA therapy and things like that was not being, you know, covered by insurance. We, you know, my wife and I were, you know, basically doing everything from rubbing rabbits' feet to doing all kinds of home remedy things to think about how to integrate our son, who has some pretty significant sensory issues with his autism spectrum diagnosis. But, you know, I was working in a state government in corrections. I had graduated with my degree in criminal justice. I'm from a very large Irish Catholic family, so I always joke, we put the fun in dysfunction. you know, I have an older sister who had used what was then called Rehab Services Commission. It was born with a pretty significant craniofacial disfigurement and had to endure many, many surgeries to reconstruct her nose and upper jaw and things like that. So we were familiar with what voc rehab was. But I was going through, I worked in corrections. I got my master's degree in public administration. My wife and I met and got married. And like everybody thinks, we were going to have several children and, you know, they were going to play for Ohio State and all those delusions of grandeur that every parent has. And I remember we were coming back from just the highest of highs. We went to the national championship game for Ohio State out in Arizona in 2002. And our son was going to a preschool Catholic school near our home here in Columbus, Ohio, on the outskirts in Hilliard. And my wife, who's a speech pathologist and worked with individuals with autism and other disabilities, but, you know, many parents don't want to see these things in their own child, handed me a letter from the school and said, "What do you think they're trying to say to us?" And I read the letter and I said, "They're preparing us for bad news." And so we met with the school and they were saying, "Look, we don't really have resources, but we believe that Connor should be evaluated for autism." And, you know, at that point in time, in my ignorance, the only thing I had ever heard about autism or thought about autism was from the movie Rain Man. And so yep. I was like, "Well, he's too old to take to Vegas to break the bank. you know, I don't know what the heck this means, but, you know, why is this happening?" And so we went through that process that a lot of parents go through. I'm sure you did as well, Rob, of getting that diagnosis. And, you know, and I certainly don't mean any disrespect to anybody who has actually lost a child, but I believe there are that what we went through and my conversations and what I discuss with a lot of parents is, you begin this mourning process for the child that you thought you had. And it really was. And I went into a pretty severe spiral. I was, you know, trying to self-medicate with drinking. I was angry at the entire world. Why was this being done to me? This was not what I had in the cards for what was planned. And my wife and I were on the path of separation and divorce. We started to do family counseling. And we were probably going through this for a good 2 years where I was just angry at the entire world. Angry at him, angry at my wife, angry at God, angry at anybody in my pathway. And I remember for whatever reason, this counselor we were seeing probably had said it 100 different ways, but for whatever reason, must have said it the right way that it hit me like a 2x4 over my head and said, "When are you going to realize this isn't about you?" And I felt about 2 inches tall. And I realized, you know, I was an assistant director at the Department of Youth Services, which is the juvenile correction system. And I just remember leaving from there and saying to my wife, "I have to change what I'm doing. I have got to think about how do I get to the next Kevin Miller and try to get them to understand. I'm not going to try to tell you not to be angry, but the sooner you get over being angry and start realizing it's not about you and you're putting your son or daughter first, the sooner you'll be able to make sure they can live a more fulfilled life." And so from that day forward, I started to put some things in place to change. I started getting involved in advocacy groups. I started to try to learn more instead of trying to fight everything. And I was lucky enough to start working with Governor Kasich, who was running for office, and talked to me about being appointed then Rehab Services Commission. And so I was appointed. I served 8 years under Governor Kasich. I was fortunate enough that I knew Governor DeWine from my time in working in corrections when he was the lieutenant governor. So I knew a lot of his staff. And so asked me if I would be willing to stay on. And, you know, the Governor DeWine's been a huge advocate. And I'm sure we'll get into that by, you know, signing an executive order saying Ohio would be a disability inclusion state and model employer. We were integral in making that happen. So this journey's come full circle to where, as an autism dad, you know, I thought my son would never graduate high school, never, you know, like I said, my ignorance of only thinking of Rain Man. Here he graduated from high school, was in National Honor Society, was on the varsity golf team, graduated from college with his degree, but he still struggles every day. And our journey is not complete, right, Rob? And so I always tell people, just because you have a son or a daughter with autism, and I have too, doesn't mean that I've walked in your shoes, but I got a pair like them. So
I've never heard that said that way. I like that. Yeah. Because they're well, here, I'm gonna a couple things first. Just like dad to dad, like that's an amazing story, honestly. And I think that it's important. Well, I applaud you for being open with that, because dads typically avoid talking about
that's things. Right.
And we look at situations that are maybe unexpected as sometimes being broken, and we want to fix it.
That's right.
And there are some things that we just can't fix because they're not necessarily broken. They're just different than what we expected.
Yeah.
And as humans, we feel all of these different emotions and we grieve.
That's right.
One of them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with feeling that way. I think we don't want to get stuck there. Right. And when you realize that you are, you get help, and that can help you to reframe things and look at things in a different way. My oldest, Gavin, I've been raising him since he was a year old. I adopted him when he was about 8 or 9. But he developed typically, he was very advanced until he was about 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And then experienced what felt like overnight, just massive, massive regression to the point where, like, in my head, it made more sense that, like, aliens came down and abducted him in the middle of the night,
right,
put a clone, but then forgot to put everything that made him him. Right. So we had like this shell of a kid, and I grieved the loss of a child that was still there.
Absolutely.
For years, I grieved that loss. And there was nowhere to go for help with that outside of like counseling, because you don't fit in anywhere, because like there's parents who actually lost their
kids.
That's right. And so then I feel guilty,
right,
because I still have mine, but he's not the same. And the closest way to relate it is like someone in like late stage Alzheimer's where they look the same, but who they are is not there anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
And I had to learn him all over again. Mm-hmm. And you know, he developed a lot of health issues and things like that, but a lot of behavioral challenges. We were told to look at like residential placement kind of things, just because, you know, for safety concerns with everybody in the house. And then you fast forward to today, and he has completed the OOD program. He has gone through he's working with the board of DD. He's got his first job. He is happy at his job. And we just found out yesterday, at the time that we're recording this, that he's in the queue to start interviewing for group homes. And that could take that could happen inside of the next 30 days. He could be out of the house, living on his own, managing his own. I mean, it's amazing how much he's overcome and how far he has risen above all the things that people told us that he never would.
Yeah. And you know, that's such a great thing. And thank you for sharing your story. And when I hear things like that, you know, it's what's important to try to get across. I mean, I've literally, and I'm not exaggerating, I've talked to dads who've told me I've had a gun to my head saying, I don't want to go through this. And, you know, what do you say to someone who feels that they're in that much pain? You know, that was the word that they used. I am in this much pain that I feel like I'm not helping my son or daughter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not a trained clinician, you know, and I tell them, look, I'm not here to try to tell you, you shouldn't be mad, that you shouldn't, you know, you're going to have to go through this journey and figure these things out. But you need to understand you're not alone in feeling those things. And you have to be able to evolve, right? I mean, you said relearning your son. You know, that's no different really when you really stop and think about it. If you're in any relationship, friends or a spouse or a partner, you know, you're not the same. My wife and I are not the same as we were when we met when we were in our 20s. And here we are in our 50s, right? We've evolved. We've changed. Well, that's no different than people with disabilities. And I think sometimes people think that they got to stay a certain way. No, they, you know, individuals with disabilities evolve as well. And so we've got to make sure that we cut them that slack as well to understand that they're going to evolve.
And yeah, that's such a good point. And I think a lot of times what happens, and this is where I, and it's just an interesting conversation I have with you, actually. One of the biggest challenges that I think parents face, even today, is, you know, they get this diagnosis, it's totally unexpected, and they're, whether that's a developmental pediatrician or wherever they are that they get this diagnosis, and they're essentially handed like a piece of paper and kind of sent on their way. And they probably, most cases, they're maybe familiar a little bit, but they it feels like their whole world is imploding. And that's how they get started on their journey. And, you know, one of the things that I've been wanting to work on was like, there is such a need to emotionally support the parents in that very first few moments, because that can set the tone for the whole thing. You know, allowing parents to not feel guilty, like, look, your kid being autistic is not their fault. It's not your fault. It's just, and they're not different than what they were before the diagnosis. You just now have context. And it gives you a chance to better understand what's going on. And it's how we identify resources.
Yeah, I talk a lot, Rob, about you have to have timing and opportunity intersect. You know, I can remember right after I was appointed, and this is, I think, in all things disability, not just an autism diagnosis. I remember talking to a dad. I was on the job maybe a week, and he lived maybe about a half a mile from my house. And his daughter, on her first day of her senior year, was driving with some friends to school on the very first day and slid and was in a car accident and was paralyzed from the waist down. Now, before I became director, this happened probably 6-8 months, maybe before. She went to the same parish that my wife went to. And so I would watch this dad on his own build ramps into his house. And, you know, I'd be driving by either going to work or coming from work and see this. I saw them doing different things to modify their house. And after I was appointed, I remember like, I'm just going to pull in there and go talk to them about, are you aware of OOD? You know, I'm sure his daughter was well into her senior year by then, or probably close to graduating by then. And so I went up, I introduced myself. I said, hey, I'm kind of a neighbor. I live, you know, about a half a mile away. And, you know, are you familiar with, you know, vocational rehabilitation? And he was like, No, I haven't. And I remember him saying this to me. I said, do you ever remember anybody talking to you about it? And he said, you know, Kevin, he said, I remember being in the hospital and, you know, they were sending people from the hospital representing, they gave me all this pamphlets and paperwork. He said, I was trying to deal with the concept of staring at my daughter, knowing I would never walk her down the aisle. And they're giving me information about employment and how to live a different way. And he said, I wasn't, the timing, right, wasn't correct. Mm-hmm. So I always say, when you talk about starting your journey, sometimes your journey doesn't really start. Like for me, my journey as an autism dad didn't start when I found out his diagnosis was there. I fought that journey. I didn't want to go down that path. And so you got to understand, you got to meet parents when they're ready. And that's the difficult part. I always say, it's not that there's not a lot of resources. You just shared that, like, wow, we didn't even know OOD existed. That's why I always jump at the chance to do these podcasts or talk about OOD or anything else. It's not that there aren't resources out there, but there's so many things out there, county, state, federal, something, you know, that's health related, is also Medicaid. And so I felt this way as a parent. It was almost like sitting in a cockpit of a fighter jet and you got all of these dials and, you know, heads up display. And it's like, it's so overwhelming. You're like, I don't even know where to start. And so really it's the navigation that is really important. And you got to get that timing and the opportunity to intersect to be able to start that. That's usually what I see. It's like, okay, I found this out, like you shared. I started to ask these questions. Well, I have a sister who's a job coach and tell me about this and saw this out of place. And so we started to investigate it. And you never know where those little tidbits are. I tell my employees, you never know when you might be the most important person in our organization, and you might be at a barbecue on a weekend. And yeah. someone talks about, hey, I just found out, don't you do something with disabilities, Kim? I heard you work there. I just found out my grandson has autism, or my granddaughter, you know, was born and is deaf. You know, you may be able to open that door to have the timing and the opportunity just right to get them the type of services they need.
Yeah, and it really is, because, and this is one of the things that I always tell people, you know, we get kind of tunnel vision. Like, we, it's easy to get sucked into all this despair and all this change, and, mm-hmm. and you try to resist that change, you try to fight it, right?
Yeah.
And you're right. I think there's multiple parts to this journey. There's that journey to acceptance. Like, you're processing everything and then you accept it. For some people, it takes longer than others, mm. and that's okay. And then it's the journey, right? And then there's different phases in that journey. And one of the most challenging ones is that transition to adulthood.
Right.
And I think that's where, like, OD plays a huge role. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I wish I would have known 10 years before I did.
Right.
You know, because I feel like it would have been a really good resource for especially my oldest when he was right. in his teens and navigating some of these things and helping him kind of grow and mature in ways that I was not able to provide right. for him at home.
Right.
So with that being said, like, how, kind of in a nutshell, mm-hmm. which is, I know that's loaded because there's so many parts to this, but, like, sure. what is, if you were to try and describe what OOD does for parents, mm-hmm. so they understand and they're aware of what the resource is, can you kind of describe what it is and how it can benefit their kids?
Well, you know, I always like to pride myself. I'm just a West Side kid from Columbus who was lucky enough to be on this journey. So I'm pretty good at trying to put things in layman's terms. You know, we are not I always like to say, we're not a social service program. We're a jobs program for individuals with disabilities. We provide a continuum of services, no matter what the disability is, to try to gain independence. And what we know from research and everything else is that if you do it the right way, which I'm sure we'll get into, by working with the employers first and reverse engineer, you know, I would like to be able to start talking to parents and individuals even before the age of 14. Because one of the things that we find is parents who are, and I was guilty of this, when I found out Connor was diagnosed with autism, my dialogue with him changed than what I would have done from a neurotypical, you know, young man or kid, like, what are you going to do? And what interests you? And those types of things. You know, I when we all were asked that question, like I was in fifth grade, I didn't raise my hand and say, gee, I'd like to be a bureaucrat in state government. Right. Yeah. But I find a lot of times with kids with disabilities, they're not having those types of conversations because, unfortunately, parents have been conditioned to think, well, I got to get them on Social Security. And I'll talk to them and I'll go, well, how old are they? And, oh, well, they're 5. I'm like, well, why don't we talk about what they can do versus starting down a path of what they can't do and having a safety net. That safety net's always going to be there. But what we should be thinking about is employment and independence first, because if you're employed and you're gaining, you know, financial freedom, that gives you more options and more choices. Mm-hmm. So that's what OOD is about. We want to make sure people understand we're a resource. We're here for parents. You know, we are we're funded both from the federal government, the United States Department of Education. You know, our history is long. And most people don't realize the Rehabilitation Act was really created as from after World War II, from the GI Bill, with so many men and women returning from the war with many types of disabilities.
Oh.
Well, it's evolved, right? I mean, a lot of that was coming back and people were missing limbs and things like that and concussed from PTS. And now what we're seeing is we're still serving veterans, but it's a lot of it's more mental health now and dealing with, you know, returning and reintegrating into society. But now we're seeing most of our diagnoses that we're serving are not visible disabilities. The overwhelming majority are invisible disabilities. So those things that are sensory and mental health and neurodiverse, you know, those things that I think we were raised to think about, where it's someone who's blind with a cane or someone who's deaf, who's using sign language, those are very small parts of the disability population, 2%, 3% each. The overwhelming majority, the next category would be physical disabilities, which are probably 18, 20%, but the overwhelming majority are those that are invisible. So that's part of that journey as well, is educating people that you already have a lot of people in your life and in your workforce. When we work with businesses, I go, you already have people with disabilities working here. You just don't know it. They've been able to adapt. And that's what we want to try to get across to people, is that when you're talking about diversity, you're talking about people who have mission statements. Are you, you know, when they say things like, we don't discriminate against age and race and sexual identity and things like that. Are you also adding individuals with disabilities in that? Because that's, you know, when you look at how many people here in Ohio, you're talking about, you know, 11.7 million people or so having a disability. And that's self-identified, which probably tells you that's a low number. So, and I've been in conferences where I'll say, how many people in here by raising your hands would say they have someone in their family with a disability? Almost every hand goes up. So if you know that that's there, you know that their individuals are, you know, they're getting married, they're having businesses, they're navigating life. We want to make sure we are a resource that people know about early as possible, especially in school. And it's not that we have all the answers, but we can help find pathways for everybody, no matter what their disability level is, to try to help succeed. And that's going to look different for everybody.
Thank you for sharing that. And I guess what I'll do is kind of relate my personal experience with OOD this past, over the last probably 12 months.
Which we should probably tell the listeners, Rob, I asked offline, like, you got to give me feedback. Was it good or not good? So you luckily said you've had a good experience working with our counselors.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's hiccups and stuff that like I would tweak if I were in charge for a day, but overall it was a very positive experience. Yeah. And it really doesn't matter. To me, it matters more what Gavin's experience was than what mine was. But, you know, we got involved through the board of DD, and then they evaluated him and recommended OOD. Mm-hmm. And so he got a job coach, and they did, you know, a couple rounds of different evaluations to kind of gauge what he would be interested in doing and whatever. And he ultimately ended up at a grocery store, a local grocery store, where he's stocking shelves and organizing things, which if I were to take him to the grocery store when he was a kid, he would be doing that anyways for free. Mm-hmm. And so now he gets paid to do it, and he loves his job. It's made him feel empowered. It's made him feel like he's contributing to society. Yep. When he did his training, he went through the Goodwill. Yep. was the path that he chose. And, you know, it was a positive experience. I think feedback wise, I think that like, as far as from a parent's perspective, it was a little jarring for me because I'm used to micromanaging his life. And for the first time, I had to kind of let go and allow them to work with him without me being necessarily in the mix. And so it became him having meetings with his job coach and I was in the parking lot. You know what I mean? Like, they're all things that should have been happening. It should have happened that way. But with Gavin, like he does very well, but he's not always a reliable source of information. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the hiccups that we came across were just kind of communication things where it would have been helpful if things had been if I had been kept in the loop as a parent, just so that I can make sure that he has the right understanding and he's not walking out thinking whatever.
Right.
But, you know, and that's just, and that could come down to the unique person that he was working with or what the search, whatever.
Right.
And so it's just a minor thing kind of, but like the overall experience for him, he learned how to interview.
Yeah.
You know, they helped him build a resume.
Right.
And, you know, seeing the look on his face when he's like, Dad, like I want you to look at my resume. Like, he's 20, what was he, 22 years old then, going on 23? Mm-hmm. Or he may have been, he was 23.
Yeah.
Cause he just turned 24, and the look on the look of pride on his face, seeing that he was doing something, that contributed to building his life and having that independent life that he wanted for himself. And it was, like as a dad, it's sort of a bittersweet thing just because like I had to learn to let go and he had to learn to kind of stand more on his own two feet. But I mean, it was, he wouldn't be where he is right now. We're not for going through OOD. And, you know, I think that more parents need to know about this than what they do. And I've talked with, you know, other organizations that I've been connected with and they're familiar with OOD and they're always trying to spread the word and they just talk about parents. It's like a common thing where parents just aren't aware
sure.
of the resources. So like I've been told like Ohio is resource rich, but connection poor.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope with this is that we're helping people to connect with something that they may not have known was there. And even if they did, it's a place to start. Now you have a place to start. This episode is brought to you by Mightier. Mightier is a biofeedback-based video game platform that teaches kids to emotionally self-regulate. This leads to a significant reduction in meltdowns and parental stress. It's backed by science out of Harvard Medical and Boston Children's and has helped over 100,000 kids. For more information, visit theautismdad.com/Mightier. That's theautismdad.com/MIGHTIER and use the code theautismdad22 to save 10%.
Yeah, you know, a couple things I would say in your sharing this story about Gavin, which, you know, brings a smile to my face, is that, you know, part of our mission is about, you know, it talks about independence. And so what you just experienced with Gavin is he started to gain independence, right? And you're right, that's a little bittersweet because you're like, oh my God, I've tried to control everything because, you know, that's a very common thing, right? Parents in general, but I think especially when you have a child with a disability, you try to protect them from the world that is not yeah. so nice out there. And the sooner you realize you're not going to protect them from all of the ills out there in the world, that's a hard pill to swallow. But
it is.
And all the fancy things I've said about OOD and, you know, what we try to do with vocational rehabilitation, the bottom line is what we helped Gavin do is find his purpose. And that's really what this should be about, you know. For myself, like I said, when I made this change to go into working in, you know, here at OOD, but being an advocate and things like that, I always tease, you know, I talk to every new employee orientation class that we hire and I tell them, you know, the day I started working here is the day I feel like I haven't worked a day minus some hair and some gray hair. But what I really mean by that is when you really feel like you found your purpose, then you feel like you're doing something that's beyond you. And I think that's where we want to try to help people. You know, it can make all the difference in the world for Gavin to be able to feel like I earned this money that I get. I love asking when someone gets their first paycheck and we've helped somebody, what did you buy? You know, and so
DoorDashed.
Right. And it's just their face lights up with the idea that I earned this paycheck and I bought this. And it's mine. You know, it's different when, hey, mom and dad provided these things. And all of a sudden it's like, I did this. And it is. That's another step in that independence and finding purpose in what they're doing.
And it's something I think a lot of us take for granted.
Sure.
You know, like one of the things that I sat down not too long ago with Gavin and I interviewed him on a podcast and all these years, I never asked him, what does independence look like for him?
Mm-hmm.
Like I had it envisioned in my head what it was going to be based on what I know of him and what everybody's told me and the limited experience I have with that transitional to adulthood thing. You know, but he told me, he's like, I want a job. I want to contribute. Like I want to have purpose in my life.
Yeah.
I want to live in a group home because he recognizes that he's probably not, it's not a good idea for him to live alone.
Mm-hmm.
And he recognizes that. And he's telling me that. And he's like, I want to live with friends and I want a job and I want to have like, I get paid. I want to come home and I want to order DoorDash and watch movies or play video games with my friends. And if they're hungry, daddy's like, I want to DoorDash something for them too. And he's like, that's what he wants. And someday he wants a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we were talking about.
Yeah.
And And that's his happy life.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of times as parents, we can sometimes get tunnel visioned, right? We maybe have different ideas of what success is than what our kids do. And stopping and just touching base and asking them these questions, like, what do you want?
You know, I can't praise you enough for saying something that I always tell people. Look, I'm kind of known for just saying it for what it is. I mean, maybe that's being the youngest of seven from a big Irish Catholic family, but
I'm the oldest of six.
Okay, so you probably go, your youngest got everything and I got nothing, like my oldest brother does. But you know, unfortunately, usually one of the biggest barriers for success when we're working with someone is the parents, because they've got their own ideas of what this should be. And when it doesn't meet that, they think it's a failure and that there's something wrong with the counselor or something's wrong with their young adult or whatever it may be. And that's not the case. You know, a lot of times the journey that they want to go through and what they're capable of, that's really the important thing. I kind of tell people all the time, and, you know, I say, look, we're not Make-A-Wish Foundation. We're not here to say, come here and we'll make you an astronaut. That's now, if you have, you know, if you can do trigonometry and you're a, you know, you do great in college and want to do and get into that, yeah, then we can. But it doesn't, we have to make sure we get the maximum potential out of what your skill set is, right? I mean, you know, my son is not somebody who could do something where he's going to be interacting with a lot of people where it's loud. Now, if you put him in an office where he could sit there and, you know, read code or do something, he'll sit there and do it all day long and be fulfilled from that. A lot of times parents, like, if you were to ask me, like, what would be a way to torture you is to stick me on a desk and do nothing but that all day long, right? So you got to be careful as a parent that you're not, and this is the hardest thing, you're not putting what your expectations are or what you think they should do. Like, you know, my wife and I still deal with this, right? Hey, he's got his degree and, you know, he's right now working for a company where they make mascots. You know, hey, that's, you know, and the guy who owns the company is a dear friend of mine, grew up with me. And, you know, we had these ideas like, well, we want him to be, you know, working for the Columbus Crew or the Columbus Blue Jackets or Ohio State. Well, that might not be his journey. That is what we think it should be. And we got to guard against that. And I think that's a lot of times in our experiences when I talk to counselors, they'll say, I have two caseloads, one for the individual and one for the parents. Yeah. And it takes a lot as a parent. I get it. I've been there too, where you're inserting yourself, where I give you kudos to say, I was sitting out in the parking lot, whereas every urge was to get out of the car and go in there. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
but I think you saw where the benefits of that are. It's not like you're still not involved. It's not, you know, it's not like you're still not there to be able to, as I always like to say, translate sometimes to your son or daughter, sometimes what this really means in the workforce or, you know, socially or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But you got to let them fall down. I think that's the hardest thing any parent has to go through, even with a traditional child, is that they're going to get hurt. They're going to fall down. They're going to fail. That doesn't mean that you should avoid not doing it. It means that's how they learn. And we've got to understand that you can't think that they're not going to do that. Everybody does that. So why wouldn't you think, if you're arguing and fighting for wanting your child or your adult, a loved one, to have the same experiences, failure is a part of that experience.
Yeah. I've had some really interesting conversations with Gary Tonks
from the ARC. I know Gary.
About this exact same thing, where people mean well, they think they're doing the right thing, but they still miss the mark and they need that.
Yeah.
Like, let's just step back and
reevaluate
this so that we can make sure that we're delivering what needs to be delivered.
Yeah.
So that's so cool. And I think that, I think that it's so important because, you know, autism is not something that's going to go away. Mm-hmm. Disability is not something that's going to go away, at least not at this point in time.
Right.
And all of those people have something to offer the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to help them to do that.
That's you know, the purpose.
Meet them where they are. And you know, some of the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life happen to fall on the autism spectrum. you know, I've come across people who have changed my life, who were disabled, you know, and I think as a society we make too many assumptions, and even as parents,
yeah.
You know, like you had mentioned, we sometimes get in our own way.
That's right. We do. I would recommend, you know, you talk about, there was an autism dad many moons ago. One of the first books I read was called Diagnosing Jefferson. If you haven't read that, that'd be a great thing.
I've heard about that.
So there was a guy who went and started researching, like, what were some of the neurotypical behaviors of people who are successful? And you can start running down the list. Elon Musk, Thomas Jefferson, oh, yeah. Albert Einstein, you know, Steve Jobs, all on the spectrum. And they were able to harness what maybe many others thought was a disability into an ability. And yeah. So, you know, that's a great example. Not everybody's going to be those types of, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, but there's an example of where it has happened, right? To your mm-hmm. point.
And everybody contributes in their own way, you know, and disability can affect people. And the other thing too, is like everybody who is diagnosed with something like autism or whatever, they're all going to be different and unique, just like everybody else. And so just because, you know, one kid is autistic and he can work at NASA does not mean that, you know, my autistic son, is able to work at NASA. Maybe he's going to work at a grocery store and do that for the rest of his life, but he's happy.
That's right.
It's like, who cares? Let him be happy. He's not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
He's contributing and he feels fulfilled.
Right. That's the journey part you're talking about where you said, you know, which is huge. Like, how about we ask them what success looks like instead of what you think success looks like? And so that is going to be different. And I remember when Connor was in seventh grade, we had a very young teacher. When we went to orientation, and I remember her going, oh, well, I had a autistic student last year and we were best of friends. And I remember leaving and I told Becky, I said, we're going to have problems with her because she had a great experience with a person with autism in her previous school. She was new to the school. And we did. Her approach is she tried to use the same approach that worked for the other child and it didn't work for Connor. So she thought it was Connor's fault. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the tough part when I'm sitting in the IEP meeting is saying this isn't about him always. This is about you and your approach. And that part of advocating as well, to your point, which is you can't think because you've met one person with one diagnosis means that you use the one approach for the previous person with this person. Everybody is different.
And that sort of kind of leads me back to one of the things that I recognized with OOD was that it wasn't a one size fits all approach.
Right.
Because there were multiple evaluations that he went through. And then they did, like, they talked to me too. I mean, and it was like, what do I think? What do I want? And then they wanted to know what he wanted.
Right.
And, you know, and the approach that they took, you know, was sort of catered to meet him where he's at mm-hmm. while not being so easy that he's not challenged.
Right.
And helping him to learn the things that he needs to grow and be successful at whatever he ultimately was going to end up doing. And right now it's at a grocery store.
Right.
And he started out 2 days a week. That was what the goal was. And now he's working 4 days a week, mm-hmm. you know, and he's doing really, really well. And I think that, you know, this is a kid that I was told for so long that he was never going to be able to do anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I just want to, you know, kind of as we close this up, one of the things that I want parents, if you're listening, to remember when you are getting a diagnosis, whether it's autism or whatever, it's sort of a snapshot in time, mm-hmm. right? It's a baseline.
Yeah.
It doesn't define where your kid is going to always be because they're going to be different. They're going to grow. They're going to overcome things. They're going to learn things just like anybody else. But it's how we identify a need. How we address it, how we help to support them, it doesn't define who they are or where they're going to be for the rest of their lives. And I hear from parents all the time who really struggle with that. They assume that because their kid is non-speaking today doesn't mean means that they're never going to speak or communicate.
Yep.
And that's just not always the case. My youngest was nonverbal for 4 years. They told us he was never going to speak. And now he's graduating high school at 15.
Yeah.
We talked about that a little bit earlier before we were recording. And I mean, that's a whole other thing, but it's like our kids will always surprise us. It's our job to keep laying that road out in front of them.
Right.
Right. And advocate for them until such time they can advocate for themselves. And I wish that I had known about OOD. Now that I do, I've got two other kids who fall into that, like, you know, early to mid teens, where they can start doing career exploration and things like that.
Well,
so I'm very glad.
I feel like you lobbed in the softball for me to be able to say, Rob. So what I want to tell, you know, parents or individuals with disabilities, and it doesn't matter what disability is, you know, write this down. I'm sure, Rob, maybe you'll put it on the website, but oodworks.com. It's not as we like to call it, a government-y looking website. It's really a portal for individuals with disabilities to go to. It talks about what the vocational rehabilitation process is. It's accessible. So if you're deaf, if you're blind, you'll still be able to navigate it. There's some audiovisual things that explains the vocational rehabilitation process. And it talks about how you have to be committed to this, because if it's going to be successful, it's ultimately up to you, the individual with a disability, if you want to work. If it's not about work, then this isn't for you. So I would tell parents, you know, anybody you know who might be interested in wanting to work, go to oodworks.com or call 800-282-4536. We will talk about how we can meet with you, do an intake, whether that's virtually or in person that you want. We have appointment centers throughout the state of Ohio and every type of community and local, you know, OMJ centers, schools. We have counselors and colleges and high schools and things like that. So we will be able to have staff and counselors meet with you at a location that works best for you. So I appreciate the fact, Rob, that you're helping us with not being such a great kept secret. We don't want that.
Yeah. And honestly, as we're sitting here thinking about this, to be completely honest with you, and after hearing like what your story was with your, you know, your journey to acceptance and figuring out all that stuff, the issue, the hardest part of the OOD experience for me as a parent was getting out of my own way.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I went through periods where I was like offended that I wasn't included, but it's by design, and it's not to offend me. It's to like help him be who he needs to be.
And you know, that is a hard part because he is an adult. And under law, you know, we have to talk with him. Now, if he says, I don't mind my dad being involved in that, that's how we are able to share. But ultimately, they are an adult, and that's under federal law, how you have to do that and how his information is protected. Right. So to your point, where we hear these types of positive things, and we've got a lot of them. If you go on our website, you'll be able to see a lot of testimonials of this, and they sound a lot like yours. And that includes people not just working at grocery stores, helping people who've become engineers and went to college and whatever it may be. It looks different for everybody else. But to your point, it's being able to understand you still have to put the work in, and you have to have people who understand, who are advocates, sometimes have to get out of their own way to allow what's going to happen to happen.
Well, lesson learned there.
Same here. Lesson learned by me as well.
So yeah, just when you're going into this process, just be aware that it's not, you have to change your thought process.
Yeah.
And you have to allow for that growth. And that can be really hard as parents to let go because we're worried about whatever, but the job coaches took really good care of him. I mean, he's doing really well, and it went even better when I just did what I was supposed to do and not try to micromanage, because it just doesn't work. Thank you so much for not only sharing your personal journey and your story, but helping us to understand what OOD is, and doing so in a way that is not like, it's just so relatable. And so easy for people to kind of wrap their heads around. And oodworks.com is the website. We'll have that in the show notes and the social media stuff so that we can connect there. And I'll have any other relevant links or, you know, anything else that that will help parents. Is there anything else that you just wanted to kind of close things off with parents? Any advice? Or,
you know, I've learned, especially when it comes to talking to parents, you know, I always say, I don't know if I can provide any advice because everybody, you know, has their own journeys and everything. But, you know, the fact that you keep swinging is kind of what I talk about as parents. You know, I understand whether your child is four, like you and I dealt with, and you're at that beginning of that hurricane where you think, oh my God, what is going to happen? Or you're dealing with, wow, he's gaining some independence. And now you're dealing with different types of issues, like he wants to have a girlfriend and has no idea how to approach that. And, you know, how do we try to navigate those types of things? No matter where you're at, if you have that type of mindset that what is it that they want and how can you help them, you know, gain that type of independence without controlling it? That's the difference. And so I just admire all parenting when it comes to, you know, parenting is tough no matter what it is. But I have obviously a special place for those parents who, and I talk to a lot of them, parents who are going through the difficulties of having a child with any type of disability and dealing with things that are unique on top of the, you know, typical things that kids have to go through. So keep doing what you're doing. Understand there's a big community out there like you that are here to try to share and support. And what is relatable, take. What isn't relatable, discard.
That's really, really good advice. And I wish that I had heard that a long time ago.
Me too. No one told me either. I had to, unfortunately, break a lot of eggs to make an omelet. So
yeah. Thank you so much for everything that you do and everything that you shared today. And I'll make sure everybody can reach out and contact you guys. And
absolutely.
And, yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for having us. And maybe we can reciprocate. We do a podcast. I hope people will tune in, follow us as well on social media to find out, you know, some of the amazing things we're doing and working with people with disabilities. You know, we just launched a new initiative with the governor, Accessible Ohio, making public places more accessible so that all the great things in Ohio can be enjoyed, whether it's parks or amusement parks or zoos or ball games. So just some wonderful things that are very unique to Ohio that we're leading the way. And I'm not just putting lip service out there. I say, see what everyone else is doing versus us. So the more you know, right? So we appreciate you allowing us this type of venue so that we can share that information.
Thank you very, very much. Before we go, I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you so much for taking the time to tune in and for all the support you guys have shown me over the last 7 seasons. I am so grateful and appreciative of each and every one of you. If you have found this useful or you just enjoyed listening, if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever app you're listening to this on, or share it with your friends or whatever, it's a great way to support the show. Thank you. I really appreciate it. You guys can reach me at theautismdad.link. That's theautismdad.link. And we'll talk soon. Thanks. Bye.